Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards, like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. Thank you so much for listening, as always. We had the eclipse today, which is crazy. You guys are listening to this after the eclipse, but that's pretty wild, eh? I live in upstate New York, so it was like 98% coverage, so it got like really eerie and spooky and dark, and it was weird. It was really weird. Anyway, so hope you guys are well. We're filming some new stuff with Burley, my puppy, and it's been going pretty good. He learned place today. He learned heel. He started heel. He started place and break. So you guys will be finding that on my YouTube as we continue to train with him. Somebody commented because we put out something other than Burley, and somebody thought that was, we're never going to see Burley again. You are. Trust me. This is a great podcast talking about off-leash work and how to get your dog off-leash, because it's really important to me that all dogs live a life of freedom and happiness. And I've never met a dog that wasn't more happy on leash than they were off. So this is all about that introduction from beginning to end and advanced. So I think you guys are going to really like this. And then at the end of the podcast, I'm going to be answering three of your dog training questions. So if you're listening to this and you have specific questions, head over to the iTunes review chart. And then if you're listening to this on Spotify, make sure you guys subscribe to, I think it's subscribe to Spotify. If it is subscribe, subscribe to the Spotify podcast. Would be mean a lot to me. We do this absolutely for free. If you're listening to this, just find your way to subscribe to it and help us continue to grow. The more you do that, the more people learn about their dogs and get better. Enjoy the podcast, guys. I'll talk to you at the end. What do we got going on?
We've got about 120-pound. Yeah, see, he's not coming as we're calling him to come. 120-pound Rottweiler mix. He's two and something. He's a very sweet dog, zero aggression, fine with other dogs. We'll just take what other dogs, you know, give to him. My biggest concern is that he won't come when he's called, and I would love for him to be off leash. We're under contract for some property, and it has like the wire fencing, but it's nothing that will keep him in. And my biggest concern is he won't be able, I think I just watched one of your videos today where you said dogs deserve to be off leash. And we don't want to keep him on a leash when we have all this property. And he should be able to wander on his own, but he just does not come when he is called. We tried when he was a tiny puppy, we had a trainer, the positive reinforcement. We just, you know, I tried to put the time in. And then we sent him away for just a week with an off-leash trainer with a collar, which we still have the collar, and I'm not opposed at all to the collar after seeing your videos, but this woman had it jacked up to like 40 or 50. Mm. I mean, he was yelping. So immediately I was turned off by that. And then I saw your video, I think, with a Great Dane where you were barely. So I don't really care what method you recommend. We also have a slip collar I've never used, but we just need something to work. So
cool. All right, great. So I would agree, like I said in that video that I posted today, like you said, like most effective way to do off-leash work, most safest way, in my opinion, is the remote collar, because it's the only thing in the world that allows us to actually hold a dog accountable off-leash if they decide, God forbid, not to listen. So, because we can scream until we're blue in the face, but if the dog is chasing a deer, bear, or rabbit, or whatever, well, good luck. So the remote collar is going to be something that we introduce layered over pre-known behaviors. So the dog has to know the behavior before we start layering it over. And oftentimes with recall in particular, dogs unfortunately get taught that the recall's this half-assed, like, kind of look at me and come in my direction, but that's really what we expect. And we do that early on in the dog's life where we say, dog, come, and the dog starts to come towards. We're like, yay, good job. And then halfway through, they get a smell of something, and then they kind of diverge. And worst case scenario is we say, dog, come, and then we start this whole process over again. And so my suggestion, like, really early on, and you know, even today, or I don't know if you've done this or not yet, but what I do with recall in particular is I just get like a longer line, and I start developing, because all of my dogs, that my personal dogs and my clients' dogs, that their ultimate goal is off-leash freedom, is I already know that the e-collar is going to polish things up at the end. So I'm training the dog in that roadmap where I have a dog out and then I'll say, dog come, the long line is on, it's attached to their martingale or their prong collar or whatever you're using. And when I say come and they don't turn around and respond, I correct the collar. The dog turns around and responds. I say, yay, good job. And then I start backing up and targeting myself. The dog comes into me, and then I pay the dog in front of me. That's the very generalized sequence of how you would do the introduction to the recall. We're obviously trying to pay the dog with high value because they're recalling off of everything that they find of value. So that's important. Once you recall a dog a handful of times and you're not giving them something more valuable than what they were sniffing over in the grass, there's a good chance that they're going to catch on and go, you know what? This dog smell over here is much more valuable than your good boy. And dogs are just opportunistic. They're animals. They're smart. They're intelligent. And they know what they want. So if you said, hey, buddy, come on, come, and the dog comes to you and you don't pay him, especially in the beginning, that's going to become a routine for them where they're like, eh, I'd rather not. This is better. And we also need to make sure that obviously they have motivation to work. So in the beginning, we are, in a sense, molding and shaping what the behavior is supposed to look like. Hey, this is what it is. It's kind of like learning how to do anything without, you know, defense, right? Meaning like, oh, this is how you shoot a basketball. This is how to kick a soccer ball. This is how you kick a field goal with no defense. This is just how you do it in principle. It's like the foundations. I say your name. I tell you to come. If you don't, I correct you. You come back. But when the reality kicks in, this is where you're likely struggling, because this is, I think you understand the idea of recall and what you've been doing isn't working. The reality is once other things come into the play, that's where people are like scratching their head, like, what do I do if the dog doesn't listen? Or what do I do if the dog is actively running away or whatever? So that's where then the e-collar starts to come in, once the dog fundamentally understands the command. And I've trained dogs on recall in so many different ways, and the roadmap for all the ways is very, very similar. You're not breaking away any nuances and proprietary ways of like, oh, try this with e-collar or recall. The reality is you say the dog's name, you tell them to come towards you. If they don't and they blow you off, you correct them. Or in some cases, some people will just ask again and ask again and ask again and ask again until they decide to, right? Just kind of depends on your methodology and your ideology of how you train. But for me, I just know that if my dog says screw you and flips me off when they want to do something alternatively, that's going to be not only potentially life-threatening, but also very detrimental to our relationship because they think that they can just get away with that. And that's a problem. So that's the fundamentals. And then the e-collar comes in a little bit later. And it's, as you know, and as you saw, the way that I introduced the remote collar is very what we call conditioning. So the dog feels it, they shut it off. The only time the e-collar goes up in the introductory phases is if a dog is doing something very dangerous or they're reacting really aggressive towards somebody. That's the only time that that happens. And I call that intervention. You're kind of stepping in and intervening in a very non-traditional way. But traditionally, we do low-level stimulation conditioning with positive reinforcement, and the dog has a really great time. Where do you think, because I understand that you've done two types of training, and it sounds like they're both kind of extremist, so, or radicals, if you will, where it's like, okay, this is not making any sense because in reality, he's just going to blow the food off, and my dog is screaming every time we recall the dog, and both of those ways are like, in my opinion, just too far in the other ends. So where are you finding the problem right now with the information that you've collected? Like, where do you think you're still having an issue?
Well, he definitely doesn't come consistently when he's called. I think with the first trainer, when he was a puppy, that just was going to take a lot of time, which it sounds like we're starting at the same place where she had us. But then the e-collar was so drastic, but he just doesn't come when he's called. I don't know what I know. Well, we need to be trained a little more on what to do. And also my other question is he going to, I mean, we've tried this before. Is he going to forget things? Are we starting over, or is he going to be confused? Mm. That's kind of what I was wondering.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think you'd start over. I think that he kind of understands the idea when you say his name and tell him to come. He's like, oh, okay, yeah. So obviously, again, like, because he's been bounced between different extremes of like, oh boy, here comes the correction, or could be the opposite of, like you said, the dog just doesn't come and he's like, oh, I'll wait till the next time she calls me. I'll come when I want to. So I think I would just restart with everything. And in the beginning, you want to start with just basic. I think it would be helpful if I just went through how to introduce the recall, and then it'll be helpful to walk through the process of introducing the remote collar with the introduction of recall. And then that way you can hit the ground running. Cause it sounds like you have the perfect dog. I mean, you don't have any behavioral issues. You have, you know, you're just working on this one thing. So let's just do that. So again,
yeah, I guess the more specific you could be, so we use our time well. Yeah. And I guess I've also seen, you know, when are we training him and when is he just our dog to hang out with?
Ooh, yeah. Good question. Okay. So when to answer that question first, because that's easy, that's your break command. So whenever you are working with a dog, you're gonna kick the dog into working gear with a cue, right? So the cue is gonna be, what's your dog's name?
Bruno.
Bruno the big boy, 120 pounds, big old Rottweiler mix. Okay. So what you're gonna do with Bruno is you're gonna say, Bruno, heel, sit, down, place. Those are cues. This is what I want you to do. Okay. That means the dog is working. That means the dog is in motion. That means the dog is clocked in. However it's helpful for you to realize that, okay, the dog is working right now. My dog is doing something. Then the release command is going to be the break command, which essentially is just exactly how it sounds. You say, okay, break. And then the dog can be a dog. And that's what that answer is when you do e-call areas.
The big one.
Yeah, cool. When you do e-collar training, your off-leash skills allow you to have your cake and eat it too on the fly. Like, he can be out, like you saw in that video, I had a Cane Corso, I was working in Texas. I was just out, long line was dragging, the dog was going ping, 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 following me around like ping pong. I didn't say anything, I was talking to the camera. And then I just turned and I said, down, boom, she went right into a down. So That was work. And then I said, okay, break. And if you rewatch that video now that you have some context, you'll see it. But I basically said break, and then the dog can go into a break and be a dog. And so when you're introducing we'll talk about the introduction of e-collar in a minute, but let's just say the recall right now in general is going to be Bruno come. If he doesn't, you correct him because he heard you. He knows what you want. But if you feel like you're at a very preliminary stage and you're like, you can't answer 100% if Bruno knows recall, you just go back down to the basics. You get into the room you're in during dinner time or in the morning when he's hungry, or if he's always hungry, you just do it whenever. And you get some treats. You get treats. Somebody else gets treats. You can have two or three people, whoever wants to do it, whatever. And you start off with name. This is what I'm going to be doing with my puppy next week or maybe even this week. You say, Bruno, come. He comes to you. Good come. Pay him in front of you. If you want him to sit in front of you, that's something that you would ask again. So Bruno, come. He goes into a sit. You pay him. And then you say break. But you have to make sure that you do it in that sequence. He has to hear that break. He has to know that that break is part of that sequence, part of the equation. Because what happens is he'll come and he'll kind of tag you, thank you very much, and they'll run away. And you want that sit. You want the recall all the way in front of you. You want the sit, hold, okay, break. And then he can go off and be a dog. That's when he can go back and sniff and run and play and whatever. So in the beginning stages, you get in a small room with some food with two people and you kind of bounce them back and forth. Bruno, come. Yes, good, come. Break. Bruno, come. Yes, good, come. Break. And you just bink, bink, bink. And you can do that all day long just so he knows what recall is. That's a the recall is really cool because it's like one of the only things dogs will know very naturally. Sit is like, you tell a dog to sit in the beginning. They're like, what? What's that? Well, you say, Bruno, come. Naturally, he's just going to turn and come barreling at you because he loves you and he heard his name and he's excited. So then you just start saying, this is, yay, good, come. And he's like, okay, sure. So once he understands that, then you can start moving it into more realistic locations. But I would suggest with any new behavior, you would start introducing that command in increments. Don't just go, like if you ever are maybe insecure about a behavior or your dog is spotty about a behavior, don't go outside with distractions. You start inside, you say, okay, perfect. We check that off. That's good. We go to a medium distraction, which might be driveway, front yard, but maybe not a park or maybe not a trail or anything like that. You make sure it's good there. But during the second round of proofing, if you will, you want to make sure that when you say, Bruno, come, because you know he knows come because you said, Bruno, come 50 times in your home before you came outside. Now, when you say Bruno, come, and he doesn't because he's more interested in what he's doing and what he smells, that's where you need some sort of correction and correct him for not coming. So you say, come. He's like, nope. Boop. He gets corrected, and then he comes towards you. Now, the important thing to really ask yourself, and I know you're not, but I always give context on this, is like, man, why would you correct your dog if your dog didn't come right away? Is the recall is a very, it could be a very deadly thing if it's not good. If you're going to let your dog off leash and be an animal, you better make sure you take recall seriously because we're not talking, oh, well, my dog's running around the dog park. If they don't come, it's not a big deal. We're not talking about that. We're talking about real life. I want my dog to have freedom and be off leash and live that life, right? Like my dogs do, or my clients' dogs do. You're like, I want that. I want to be able to just open my car door, my dog gets out, and we just kind of live our life together that way or whatever. So that's why it's important that when you say come, you don't let your dog get away with that. Nah, maybe in a little bit. It's not only potentially dangerous in the future when recall is serious, but it's also, it really has a huge role in your relationship as well. Just like with parenting, with management, with being a boss, with your dog. If you say something and your dog's like, nah, I don't want to do that. And you're like, oh, okay, fine. It sets the tone for everything. All I got to do is shrug my shoulders and say, yeah, give me a minute. And that's not very good. So Making sure that you have some sort of collar on the dog when you do pop that the dog cares about. Because I've seen it many times where people will use harnesses and the dog just goes thunk, 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 and they just stand there. Or they use a flat collar and they just thunk, thunk, thunk. So just making sure that you're popping and correcting and making, you got to matter to your dog. That's really important. Like, you have to matter.
What kind of collar, what kind of correction do you recommend?
So the long line is going to be attached to, you can use a slip collar, you can use the plastic pinch collar, you can hook it to your, you could hook it to your slip leash that you have, you can hook it to a prong collar, you can hook it to a martingale, anything that's just, that has action, right? And some people ask me like, oh, what is the martingale?
What is that?
Martingale is like a hybrid between a flat collar and a slip leash. It's an everyday wearing collar that has action, but it has a restriction. It's a very common collar. Once you look it up and see it, you go, oh yeah, we've had that before. It pulls up, but it doesn't go all the way like a slip leash or a slip collar would. So you pop like this, and you're popping. Now, again, in my experience, if the correction doesn't matter to the dog, there's a good chance it's not going to be super sustainable, where they're just going to blow you off. And that's it. So that's what it comes down to. Your kid's sitting there playing video games and they're into it, and you say, hey, buddy, time to get off and do homework. They go, no. And you go, okay. You walk away. Bingo. Thank you. Right? Same thing. You say, time to do your dishes. No. Bingo. And you walk away. So you have to matter, right? You have to say, boom, I'm unplugging this. This is done. I'm eliminating this, right? That's kind of like the reprimand you have to have in order to take it seriously. So that way, when you say it again, they're going to go, oh crap, I better do this. Because last time you unplugged my Xbox. And this time it's like, yeah, you're getting corrected if you don't listen. I'm taking this seriously. So when you're doing that recall, it's going to be, you know, 3 times every 5 minutes. You don't want to be a broken record. So you let him out. He's on his long line. Bruno, come. If he doesn't, correction. You give him a nice correction there. It's got to be fast. You really want it to kind of get his attention. He turns around and comes running towards you, making sure you target yourself. So dropping your shoulders, walking backwards. Good boy, good boy, good boy. And you target yourself. Make yourself a target for him. He comes to you. You put him into a sit. You pay him. Okay, break. And then you break him. That's the traditional setup for recall. And you do that again about every 5 minutes. And I've never had a dog not respond to those steps.
So are we telling them to, that's where I get confused. Are we okay. telling them to come and then not tell, I mean, then we're telling them to sit. Is he getting confused, or are we just saying, come, Bruno? And then when he comes, we reward him right away? Or are we trying to get him to sit? And then it's 2 commands. That's where I got confused, I guess, before.
Yeah, it's really preference. I always bridge them together. It's a recall and then a sit. Once the dog gets close enough in proximity, we tell the dog to sit. And what this does is it puts the dog's butt on the ground, so you have more leverage. So they're not just tagging you, because that's what everyone does. Like, I can tell my dog at any point in time, completely off leash, no matter where we're at, to left, which means you got to touch my left side. And she goes right on my left side. There's no, like, what a lot of dogs do is they kind of just mosey on your way, and then they get sidetracked and they go up the hill and they're gone. Or they come zipping to you, they grab a piece of food, and then they're gone again. And what's the point? It's a very one-sided recall there. The dog's getting paid and running away. You're not really getting a recall. So you can do the sit, you don't have to, but I typically will recall, put the dog in a sit in front of me, and then break the dog. Now, to go back a little bit, when you say that confused you, that's not how I would do it with a puppy. Like, the recall would be all one thing, right? Right now, we have to separate him because he doesn't know the traditional. Like, again, like with my dog Lakota, left. She learned that as a puppy. She never knew anything different. But with a dog that's already mature and past the puppy stages of learning, you can do it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, when he hears come, he already has an idea of what it is. It's this very inconsistent, sloppy, where am I going to be? Where am I going to go? Am I going to stay for long? Am I going to come at all? So really, I just bridge two behaviors together to make it easier. I say come, the dog starts to come, they stick their head in my stomach, and I say sit, the dog sits, pay the dog, and then I say break, and I just bridge them together.
I think I felt when I was trying to do that kind of training with the treats, He just follows me around because he knows I have treats and I can't get him to get away from me. So I mean, that's why I finally just gave up. I was like, he's just getting treats for no reason. And he's not quite as food motivated now as he was before, depending on what we have.
Yeah.
If we're going to do high value treats, then he's probably going to freak out.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of the point when you're doing recall, and that's levels of advancement. So if you're staying in the same room and you're not doing anything, that's going to happen. And that's not the best training because you're not getting realistic situations. So if you feel like you recall him in your room or in your area and he's like stuck on you, you're like, okay, this kind of defeats the purpose. It would. So then you go to other realistic locations, and there's going to be a point where he's going to be like, oh, what's this? What's that? Oh, a squirrel, a bird, a dog, a cat, whatever. And he'll start to drift away. But that's also why you don't, like I said before, you don't want to make it too repetitive, because that's what a lot of people do. They get into a clinical, static, stagnant room. They get a bunch of food. The dog's super hungry. They let the dog out and they recall the dog, and the dog just stays glued on them. And we just assume, hey, look how good your recall is. And then you go outside and try it and you're frustrated. I'm like, because that's not real. So when you get out with a long line in a more distracted environment, when you're ready, and you might be already, you can make that decision. You're like, yeah, we're past that little beginner stuff. Let's go right into the more intermediate medium stuff. Then you go out to that level with more distractions, and you let him get into something. So a lot of people, when I say, okay, do a recall, they do this whole thing. And I don't know why, but they do this whole thing. They're like, okay, Bruno, sit, stay. And they want, I'm like, no, that's not recall. At no point in your life with your dog are they going to be sitting directly staring right at you when you need to recall them. They're going to be away from you. They're going to be 20 feet this way. They're going to be sniffing the ground. So it's important when you give him a break, it's the point of the break, that he is, you're kind of being sneaky. He goes off and he does whatever. And if he's not paying attention, Bruno, come there. If he comes to you, pay him. If he doesn't, correct him. But you're always going to find, I've never worked with a dog that was so food motivated that when we went outside, they completely ignored the reality, the grass smells, the birds, the chipmunks, the squirrels, the rabbits, etc. They've always drifted off at some point because you don't pay them, you ignore them. So don't do that, because a lot of my clients will say, go on, get out of here. I got nothing for you. The treats are over. Don't talk to him. Just ignore him completely. Look right over his head and he'll start to wander off and he gets into something. Wait. Okay, Bruno, come. And then go through the sequence. And then pay him, give him a break, wait until he has another minute sniffing into other things, and you do it again. Does that make sense?
He won't know what break is at first. But yeah, that does make sense. I was just thinking that he won't know what break means at first. Does it just kind of,
no.
Does he just kind of, how does he figure that out?
Good question. Well, the answer is yes, he won't know what it is. It's kind of like a silly thing in the beginning, because he doesn't know what it is, but I promise you they will. He'll figure it out, because if you didn't break him, you're putting him back into a sit. So let's say he recalls to you, you put him into a sit, and you're getting ready to say break, but you don't, he gets up, back into a sit. But then you say, okay, break, and your voice inflection, and he wanders off, and you let it happen. So he'll go, oh, this whole break thing means I can get out of the sit. And then you start applying break to every other behavior. And he goes, oh, this whole break thing means I'm done with work. So exactly. He's not going to understand it. And sometimes I will help reinforce the break with an object. I'll use a ball. I'll use a piece of food. I'll say break, and I'll throw it in front of them. And I'll make them muscle memory, move their body when they hear break, or they just kind of bounce away from me. And that's really helpful. So, yeah, that's how I would do that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, once you get to a point where basically the dog is recalling really well, and the only time he's not recalling is when he's heavily distracted or into something, that's when you would get out the e-collar and start conditioning that. Do you know what kind of e-collar you have, what it's called, what it looks like?
I'll grab it.
That way I can give you very detailed level orientation, because that's huge. And people, the e-collars are not made the same. The levels are completely different. So if you have an e-collar that I know, I can walk you through even better.
What's the brand on the outside? It just says ecollar.com educator. Oh, here
okay,
we go.
Got it. Yep. That's all I need to know. Okay. So, so the e-collar that you have is a good collar, and it's just fine for training dogs. So what you're going to do is you're going to, I know you said you were at like 40 and 50, which is high. So
no, I mean, I didn't do that.
No, I know.
I didn't do that. I mean,
no, I know. I
don't know what she was at, but he was yelping, and yeah. I shut down after that. So
yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, so I just want to let you know, like there's corrective levels like that. Yelping and stuff would be in an emergency situation. Like that would be worst case scenario if he's, you know, really an emergency situation, but it shouldn't be at any point in the introduction stages. And the goal is to, like, you know, never really get to your dog to a point where that's happening, if at all, like, you know, often at least, because then you're like, okay, that's his corrective levels. And if it does happen at those corrective levels, that means that he's, you know, in danger. And it's like, I'll take the yelp for a second versus anything else. So, all right, your conditioning levels. So you have to start conditioning him. So the way that we do it is we put the e-collar on, we make sure it's nice and snug, and we start off on our conditioning levels, which is much different than what he's used to. So we typically start off on a 3 or 4, and we will hold the continuous down. So on your remote collar, there's going to be an M and a C on the front. If it's an M, you're going to hold the back of the collar. There's a little button that says M and C on the back. You're going to hold it until it...
I think we have different letters.
Oh, there's an M and C.
There's an M and C? I thought so. I see L. That button right there? That one?
On this
turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Green, it should be an M and a C.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think we charged it anytime recently.
That's okay. That's what I'm just letting you know. There's gonna be
an. You know what it is.
yeah. I've.
Oh, seen.
So there's gonna be an M and a C on the screen, and on the back there's also an M and a screen button, M and a C button.
Oh.
You want to stay on.
There it is.
Yeah, you want to stay on continuous, which is the C. Which means your black button is going to be a continual button, which means you can tap it and it's only going to go for as long as you tap it, or you can hold it and it's going to go for as long as you hold it, which is continuous. The alternative is going to be momentary, which basically means if you tap it or hold it, it only just goes boop like that. They have, both have different functionalities, and we have to remember that the e-collar is used in so many different ways for so many different dogs and so many different types of training. Service dog training, therapy dog training, off-leash training, deaf dog training, hunting, etc. So when you're doing this type of training, we're going to stay in a level 3 or 4. We're going to make sure that the front of our e-collar has a C on it. We're going to hold the continuous. Or if you're using like my Dogtra, we just have a continuous. There's no variations. So you just hold continuous. So you're going to say, Bruno, come. You're going to hold that continuous down until he turns around and commits to you. And then you're going to shut the remote collar off by removing your finger. and you're going to reward the dog at the same time and tell him good boy or good come. So that honestly is like what you're going to be doing in the very early stages. So you're doing the same thing you were doing before. Now you're just adding in the e-collar stimulation. And the overall goal for the remote collar stimulation is to teach the dog that that sensation is you. And the goal for that is because that way you can touch him from a half a mile to a mile away, depending on what collar you have. So if he knows that that little sensation on his neck is you, you can touch him anywhere, which is the goal. And the way that we do that is we pair it with our voice. So why does the bag of chips crumpling call a dog over? Why does the leash get a dog excited? Why does the word ride or walk? It's all conditioning. They associate those things with other things that they like. And that's what you're doing with the e-collar. He feels the sensation. He goes, oh, mom or dad want something. He hears come. He goes, oh, I know what that is. He recalls. And in the future, when you get fancy with it, you can say sit, you can say down, you can say place, and it's associated with everything. So he goes, oh, mom or dad want me. And the reason is you can touch him from a distance. And so in the beginning stages, that's the objective of the remote collar sensation. It's very, very simple conditioning. It's just using advanced technology to train a dog, which some people have a really hard time with, mainly for the reason that you were kind of talking about earlier, is they can take advantage of it. And not that the way that I'm saying is the right way. It's just the way that I have found over time that doesn't cause any stress to the dog until, you know, they're in a deadly situation. And then it's like, I don't care if they're stressed, you know? So that's really what the e-collar introduction looks like, is we're going to be, typically it's recall in place. So we say, Bruno, come. We hold the continuous on your button, which is going to be your black button on top. It says an S. You say, come. You're going to hold. The dog is going to come to you, and you're going to shut it off. Super simple.
So when he's at you, or when he starts to turn and run towards you?
Great question. So that's discretionary through my experience. The reason being two main things. The first thing is some dogs are more committed than others. They have more commitment than other dogs. They have more drive than others. So you say, Bruno, come. He's like, hell yeah, food. And he comes running and he doesn't stop. That's when I gauge it. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to tap it until he starts to commit. Other dogs are coming towards you, and then all of a sudden they lose their way, let's say, right? They wander off. Then you'll say, okay, you're that dog. I'm going to hold it till you get to me. So for me in the beginning, personally, I would hold it until he gets to the position. So when we do place or bed, I would say Bruno place. I hold the continuous button until he gets all fours on the place. And then same thing with recall. I would wait for him to get all the way to me. But sometimes some dogs are sensitive and they turn, they start to come to you and they feel the pressure and they're like, why am I still feeling this pressure when I did it already? I did the thing. And then they kind of freeze up and they get stuck. And then that's where you're like, okay, we're going to go back the other way when they commit. Most dogs are not that dog. Most dogs are not like that. You hold it, they commit all the way, and then you shut it off. It's no big deal. They go, okay, that shuts off when I do it, whatever. So that's the process. And so the dog will learn over time, just like the dog learned over time that when they hear you guys open a bag of chips, they're like, oop, that's something good for me too. Or the leash or anything else that we've conditioned our dogs to do. The keys, the jackets, the boots, they're like, that means something. That's all we're doing with the remote collar. So we're saying, Bruno, come, Bruno, come, Bruno, come, Bruno, come. Now, the little tiny details in there are finding the right level. So I typically say between 3 and 5 because that's the range that 97% of the dogs I work with are at. If you see your dog feeling uncomfortable in a way of annoyance, which means they'll act like there's a fly on them. They're like, hey, what is this? You go down a little bit. Usually one level. You want the levels to be incremental to a point where it's not uncomfortable for the dog and they're not physically showing you uncomfortability. And that just looks like, again, they're looking around. The people, it's interesting to see the response when I say, okay, this is what an e-collar correction is. And it's the dog listening versus not listening, but also sometimes they're like, hey, what's this? It's all it looks like. Not, it shouldn't be the yelping and that stuff. Unless it's a dangerous situation. So, because that's the beauty of the remote collar at the end of the day, the yelping is, holy crap, we can do that from a half a mile away, where alternatively we couldn't, right? The dog would just keep going. So I don't want to like downplay like the yelping is like this big, terrible thing, because the reality is that's why we use remote collars, is we can touch a dog from a half a mile and they can be off leash, which is remarkable. Just like how we're Skyping right now and you're in a different state than I am. It's remarkable technology. So when we do the remote collar introduction, you want to do it for, I mean, shorter is better, to be honest, like 5 to 10 minutes. So maybe Bruno come 5 times, however long that takes you, pay him heavily when he gets to you, and then break him. And then maybe half an hour down the road, you do it again. And so every time he feels that sensation, he's almost going to be looking for you, because he's looking for food, right? It's not even a recall association. It's like, every time this happens, I run to mom and get food. And that's kind of the cool thing. So that's what the beginning stages look like with the e-collar sensation. Some common mistakes that dog owners will make is they let the long line go too early. So I always will start on a short leash. The first day is on a short leash with place and little tiny micro recalls. Second day is going to be a longer line, mainly for the recall pull. So we do place, we do recall. Because the important thing is a lot of dog owners will say, the dog's not listening, do I go up? And you can't do that right yet. I mean, you could, but it's not going to do you any good. The dog is going to get corrected or feel that heavier sensation and very, very likely not know what to do with it. And so you have to teach him how to shut the remote collar off and what it is first before you rise the levels. So the long line allows you to hold the dog accountable with information that they know very well that you've already done. So if you say, Bruno, come on the second day and he's on a long line, we're not searching for numbers that's going to get him to listen. We're going to just use the leash, because the introduction phases shouldn't have anything to do with corrections or punishment until they really understand it at a fundamental level. So leave that long line on for day 2 through 4, essentially. And then on the fourth day, you start dropping the long line and you start doing those more realistic recalls. But the dog is away from you. You say, Bruno, come. The dog comes towards you. And that's pretty much the process. It usually takes, if you can do it several times a day, it usually takes about a week to introduce the remote collar. And then after 2 weeks, you've pretty much mastered it. And the
When you say several times a day, how long is each training session to be effective?
Yeah, so I usually do like 5 to 10 minutes. It's typically going to be like 5 recalls per session. You don't want to be the boy who cried wolf, where you're just constantly recalling the dog. You give the dog a break, you let him out, let him get into something, recall him, give him a break, let him out, let him get into something. So 5 of those recalls within 5 to 10 minutes is ideal.
Okay.
And then the goal is once the dog understands the remote collar, you can then use it as a correction if need be. So let's say day 6, day 7, he's recalling 100% of the time with the long line being dragged. You take the long line off, you go to a safe place, and you test it out in reality. And you say, Bruno, come. He says no, because you're at a further distance away, and he feels like he can take advantage of you, or he gets a sniff of a bunny or whatever it is. That's where you can start going from your conditioning levels to your corrective levels. And it's a very important process, because once he feels the pressure rising, because you've conditioned it, he knows how to shut it off. He knows where it's coming from, and he knows it's you. And because you've conditioned the recall, because you've practiced that, he knows where to go with it. He's not just going to freeze and freak out. He's going to go, oh, okay, fine. And then you go back down. So on your collar, you also have a boost feature. I'm not 100% confident on how to set it up on that unit because I use my own dog trick collar, but you have a boost feature, which basically allows you to toggle between your conditioning levels and your corrective levels once the dog is fully trained. So you're out, he gets into something or he takes off after something unpredicted. You say, Bruno, come. And then you jump to your corrective levels and you can stop him dead in his tracks and he'll turn right around. The other thing that I'll point out too, it's really important to know about dog behavior and behavior in general. When we're stimulated, we are not used to our normal lines of communication and the level that it sits at, right? So right now we're talking like this. If we were to go and talk at a Metallica concert, we'd both be yelling back and forth at each other because our environment changed, which means we have to change our volume. We have to change our intensity just to communicate because our environment got more stimulating. So it's the same exact thing with dogs. If you're training inside, your conditioning levels could be between 2 and 3. If you're training outside, your conditioning levels may be between 5 and 8. And your corrective levels outside may be 10 to 15. So just know that too, that when you do change environments, especially from non-distracting to more distracting or more stimulating areas, the dog's brain, attention, and mind is going to wander, and you're going to have to go up a little bit to really snap him out of it because he can't even feel it at that level. It's a completely different thing, right? Again, you're sitting at your house meditating and somebody taps you on your shoulder and you're going to be like, what? Right? You go to a concert, somebody taps you on your shoulder, there's a good chance you're not going to feel it because you're just bumping into everybody all the time and people are moving, right? It's the same thing outside. The dog's not going to feel those low level stimulation numbers, but it's important to not go up to your condition, your corrective levels until the dog is, you know, fully conditioned with it. And that way he knows what to do with it. It's just like anything else, right? You think about practice, right? Like, okay, we've never rode a bike. Well, we're not going to push him down a hill. Nope. We're going to teach him how to go around the cul-de-sac first 100 times before we push him down a hill. Same thing with e-collar training. We're not going to let the dog off leash surrounded by a bunch of deer, although you could once he's fully e-collar trained. And that's the beauty of the e-collar is now the world that you live in with your dog is limitless. You have no fences. You have no boundaries. You manually set your dog's boundaries. And that's it. Like, that's the cool thing about e-collar trained dogs is they're anywhere. You say down, whoosh, right into a down. You say come, they come. It's really cool. So that's the process.
Okay. I guess, well, I don't, sorry, I don't know what my question was. Choking. It's just a lot of information. Do you have, some videos that you recommend? Just, I think the one I saw a long time ago was a Great Dane, but if you have one or two videos you recommend, then we'll watch them. And then I think that'll help me.
Yeah, I have.
Cause I need to be trained first.
Yeah. So. If you go to my channel, Tom Davis Dog Training, and you type in e-collar or remote collar. I have put out a new e-collar introduction video pretty much every year, and they keep getting better in production. So there's two that we've done in the last couple of years that are really, really nice that you can watch. And then I also have a course as well, which you can take at home, which basically takes an untrained dog, an 8-month-old shepherd, and we train it with a remote collar. One thing I forgot to say, talking about the e-collar course, because that reminded me. What I like to do with my dogs and my clients before we go out to the real deal is I will practice my corrective levels to see what my corrective level is and to make sure that my dog handles and responds to the levels appropriately. So what that means is this is what we usually do. We do a contact recall, contact food recall is what I call it. So the dog is literally in somebody's hand eating food. And then I say, Bruno, come. That person closes their hand so the dog can't access the food anymore. And the dog is likely going to sit around the hands and nibble and scrape and lick and try to get the food out. Then you're going to use your e-collar and you're going to go up, 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 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And an e-collar correction is simple. The dog isn't listening. And then the dog listens. It's that simple. I've done it so many times. That's why it's so funny. It's not funny because there's people like how you hired before that use it like that. But the e-collar correction is literally the dog listening. And it's just the intensity. Again, you're saying somebody's name and they're zoning out. And then you say it louder and like a movie. Tom, and boom, you snap at it. Oh, sorry. Whoa, I was eating food. So that's what I typically do. So you get comfortable knowing what number will your dog respond if there's something super high value in front of them that they have access to. And it also really helps you practice the muscle of your dog responding to that correction, and you know that, and you feel confident that they're going to do that. So that's the other thing that I do a couple times before I go out. The more you do it, the better your dog's going to be. Excuse me. So that's the other thing you do is have somebody just hold kibble or food. The dog's eating out of your hand. You say, Bruno, come. That person closes their hand. And then you sit there, and the dog's going to stay there because they're going to like, screw you, I'm eating food. You're going to go 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The dog's going to boop and turn around and come to you. Good boy. And then you go back down. So then you find that.
Can I hold this button down while I'm turning it up? Mm-hmm. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. So you still have the online course? I guess I couldn't find it.
Yeah, my online e-collar course is on our courses page. Yeah.
Okay. Just in case we need reinforcement or a check-in. So this is, I guess this is enough. Like, this is what we want to focus on. I mean, he doesn't walk well on a leash, but I feel like this kind of fixes that eventually. Or not. I mean, really, my biggest concern is him running away and getting hit by a car, or running away and never seeing him again. So if this is the step we should be taking, then this is what we want to focus on.
Yeah, they're all, I mean, recall and heal are two separate things, but yeah, I mean, ultimately, if the recall is your main concern and focus, then this is going to do that. But the leash work is different because it's a different command. So, you know, it's the same thing like, oh, my dog, like if you put the equation together, my dog doesn't come back when called, you're like, my recall is not good. Same thing if my dog is pulling on the leash, my heel isn't good. So it's another conversation of teaching the dog how to heel. And it's really the same principles though. I mean, it's starting off in a small distracted environment and then building it up as you go and making sure that you matter to your dog. So when your dog passes your leg because they smell a worm in front of you, you can correct them and say, hey, I don't care if there's a worm, chipmunk, bird, squirrel, dog, or deer. You can't cross that leg until I release you on your break. And that's what keeps our dog safe and healthy. And I just talked to somebody on the phone that didn't do any of that. And every time you don't do any of that, your dog is a menace and they are mentally unstable. I mean, there is some unicorn dogs out there that you get pretty lucky. I've had those myself, but they are few and far in between.
So when we're starting, when we're kind of popping him back with the leash and his collar, as not the e-collar. I mean, we're doing that once, and then is he? What happens after that? What's the next?
With the heel?
No. With this, I don't want to focus on too many things. I think that was our problem. We were trying to teach him everything, but so just going back to step one, Bruno come, and then he's, you know, are we just popping the leash, and then what happens next, or what should happen and what shouldn't happen?
Well, he should come to you, and then when he comes to you, you would pay him, you know, when he went into his sit, and then you'd break him. So it's the same sequence. When you tell him Bruno come and he doesn't, you correct him. He comes running to you. You target yourself. If I have to correct a dog, I typically don't pay him externally, which means I don't give him food or a tug or a ball or anything. I just will say good, but not good enough, really, because you didn't really listen. So I'll still motivate them and encourage them, but I won't actually pay them unless they do it, because what's the point of paying somebody? You know, there's the second place reward, third place reward. It discourages the dog from actually working hard enough to get the treat in the first place.
So the first time he gets a treat.
Yeah, if he does it.
If you have to correct him, he does not get a treat. He just gets a little.
Good job.
Tapper.
Yeah, he did good, but not good enough. But that's just, okay. Yeah, I think that's just my philosophy. You know, it's something you don't have to. I'm just saying, like, if you're paying a dog, whether they come the first or third time, why wouldn't they just always come the time that they want to come, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have any questions anymore?
I don't think so. So we'll need some kind of corrective collar and a long line, right, to get started. So
we have the slip collar But I never used it because I didn't feel like I knew how, and I didn't want to use it if I didn't know how. It's almost how I felt with the e-collar. I didn't know how to use it. It wasn't really fair to him to use it. So
yeah, I would get a with him because he's so big. You'll probably want like a plastic pinch collar or prong collar or something because he might not give a crap about the slip because he's so big.
Yeah, he's pretty thick.
Yeah, his neck is pretty thick.
Maybe like a prong collar, I think.
So like a prong collar.
Yeah, that's what I would do is I'd get a prong, and in that way it's, you know, it's enough to really get his attention. Because really what you're fighting for is attention. Like his head is buried in something else, and you say come, and he's like, bang, you correct him. You're getting his attention. What, me? Right, that's what you're doing. Pay attention. When you hear me, respond. That's what you're doing. That's what a correction is.
Okay. All right. Anything else we should know or?
Not that I can think of. I would, follow up with those couple videos on YouTube for free. And then if you want more, you can take the e-collar course. And that's, I think that covers it that I can think of.
So at some point, you know, if we have this big plot of land, we can let him out. I mean, the ideal is he'll come. If I don't see him, I just click the collar and then he'll come running back.
He should
ideally.
He should show himself to you. Like he should make his way to you for sure. And then from there you can, because a lot of times if dogs feel it but don't hear anything, they might check in with you to see like what's up, and then you can kind of guide them there. But yeah, ultimately the e-collar, like with my clients and even my personal dogs, is anytime I want to go off leash downtown or at a park or at a field or anything, like it's just universal that I don't have to worry about. And the collars aren't even on my dogs anymore because they're trained. So once they're trained to listen to you, no matter where they are, everything changes.
When do you make that leap when you let them, when you open the door the first time on, you know, unrestricted land without a fence? When do you, when do you make that decision?
It's consistency in the areas. So like if you have that property that you're closing on, like you would be training in that location on the long line with the long line dragged. So you just, and you say, hey, look, he's recalled 10 out of 10 times. He responds. The most important thing is the dog responding to the e-collar pressure as it rises. Because if your dog responds to the rising pressure, which they pretty much all have, I don't remember a time that they haven't, then you don't ever have to worry about it because you can dial things up and down. But to answer your question, because a lot of people just have very specific areas they want to go and let their dogs be off leash. And, you know, whether it's the beach, the hiking trail, or a field, you go to those areas with a long line and you start doing practice recalls. And as long as the dog is responding to the practice recalls and also responding to the e-collar pressure when you rise in your corrective levels, then that's when you can, you know, unclip the dog. And you just have to do it, you know, but you have to just prove to yourself, and your dog has to prove to you that you're capable of doing it. That's important.
Okay, that's helpful. I wouldn't have, so to train in the area, that's great.
Because awesome. You don't want to be training in your backyard and then be like, okay, we're good, and then go to a field with different animals and different smells and let the dog off leash, and then things change. That's just be safe. That's all you want to do is just be safe, and that's a piece to that of being safe is letting the dog off leash with the long line being dragged and proving to yourself over and over again that you're ready.
Okay. All right, cool. I found you online and then mentioned it to a friend of mine. I said, I think I finally found a trainer that makes sense. And she had sent her dog to you. So for 2 weeks. So that worked out well.
Cool.
Yeah, awesome. Anything else?
I don't
think so. Thanks, that was really helpful.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. Good luck with everything. And like I said, those YouTube videos are out there. You can watch. Just type in e-collar or remote collar on my channel and then check out my course if it's something you want to do.
Yeah, that might help me again. I think I need more training. Mm-hmm. But okay, great.
Awesome. All right, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. All right, this is the end, which means your questions. First one comes from Myra Cyrus, 5-star review. Hey, Tom, I didn't know if you read the same people's rating at all. That's okay if you don't. Sure. My Mal is a backyard breed Malinois, shelter pup from California. I purchased the No Bad Dogs 280C. She has tremendously improved a ton of her conditioning. Was very impressed, very fast, and helped her with anxiety and crate training too. I would absolutely love to do training with your facility and stuff, although my mom doesn't exactly agree with the whole No Bad Dogs thing. Sadly, I will definitely be saving for the No Bad Dogs subscription later down the line. My mom is on Instagram if you'd like to see my dog. I could care less if you don't follow. I just want to take a moment. Okay, here it is. I don't at all ever want my dog to be medicated, mainly because it's not good for anyone, left alone sensitive Mal. Are there any tips for hardcore Mal with severe anxiety? I've had her too long to stop now and give up. She's been improving, and she's gotten 52 commands on the 25th of February, and I hope you have some tips for her. I would just say exercise is really important. I think medication is a role, but you know, it's not something that you have to go to. I think it's important to exercise your dog, both mental and physical. If a dog has anxiety, you want to give him guidance. You want to give him less thinking. You don't want them to constantly think about what they're doing or what they should be doing. You want to make it really clear that you are making those decisions. So I would say lots of training and leadership is really important. I've talked about that a lot. It's all over my Instagram and my YouTube. You can check out all that stuff. Next one comes from AFATO. 5-star review. I'm so thankful I found Tom's podcast a year and a half ago. I was searching for good information on dog training when I got my first large breed puppy, Great Pyrenees Poodle mix. I've always had small dogs and I had no idea what I'm getting myself into with this large dog. Unfortunately, I did not realize how much I need education on how to handle a large dog until he was about 6 months and 70 pounds and teenage dog tantrums started showing up. I was also misinformed in a way of brainwashed and positive-only training ideology that I was initially reluctant to listen to Tom had to say. It only took one of Tom's podcasts to capture my attention, to open my eyes, Tom's ability to connect, relay information, explain dogs' behavior, and rationale for implementing different strategies was clearly like an epiphany to me. And I kept listening a year and a half later and binge listening ever since then. Thank you. That's good that you're open, because guess what? Your dog is going to benefit from it. First his podcast, then his YouTube videos, and now my 2-year-old Great Pyrenees is a different dog. Oh, well, this is not a question. This is just a really nice review. Thank you so much. I sincerely love these reviews, because I have a business, right? And then the business reviews are all, a lot of them about my staff and stuff, which is nice, but these reviews are cool to read because they're particular to how I've helped people, which is really nice to see. So very happy for you. I'm gonna screenshot this and post it on my Instagram. Cool. All right, next question comes from Nerdy and Wordy. 5-star reviews. I have listened and watched Tom for 5 years. Wow, 5 years. Thank you so much. You are my homie. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. I've successfully raised and trained 2 German Shepherds. Every bit of his training philosophy is sensible and effective. Listen, listen, listen. All these episodes, even if you don't pertain to you. Thanks, Tom. I don't have any questions, but I'll let you know when I do. Tom, episode 244 was so relevant and vulnerable. Thank you for that. Keep up the great podcast. Thank you so much, Nerdy and Wordy. Next one, Alicia Sweezer. Tom does a great job of binging a variety of topics and dog owners. Learn from them. This is great. Thank you so much. Yeah, you guys are so sweet. Let's do another one. Lauren 1804, giving raw a try. Thank you so much for the recent podcast. I have an 8-month-old GSD, and I really knew 100% kibble wasn't our journey I wanted for her. I tried gently cooking meals, and it was struggling to make sure that it was all balanced and what recipes would work for an understanding full circle, and costing understanding things at the end of the day was trying different things to make it balance. Anyway, I can see we feed raw. I kept seeing We Feed Raw and all the work that you do with them and feeding to your dogs. And after listening to her and her great story, I just don't think I can feed kibble knowing what I know now. And even before that, just hearing it. So I don't even finish listening to the podcast. I was signed up for my first box. Hopefully you like it. Awesome. Thank you so much. All right, let's get one more. S Funk 06. 5-star review. Thank you. Hey, Tom, I've been loving your No Bad Dog podcast, YouTube content, and the members club. The podcast gives comprehensive information helping understand their dogs. Thank you. My question, as we work through some things, especially new things, he does sometimes redirect me through nips my hands barking. This is a 5-month-old Border Collie mix, just so you guys know. Is this something I should work on directly, or is it likely to result in gaps in our communication and we would get better with anything else? My common sense says, it depends on what it is, depends what they're getting frustrated. Why are they getting, so if you're working through things, I would need to know why they're getting frustrated. Like, are you correcting them? Are they nervous about getting on a plank? Like, why are they actually getting nervous? Like, why are they redirecting? That's what I would need to know, because that's important. So if you can, let me know, like re-edit that or repost it and let me know why your dog is getting frustrated. As we work through things, especially new things, he does sometimes redirect on me and nips my hands barking. So let me know what you're talking about. That would be helpful. And if anybody's listening to this, you want me to answer your question, head over to the iTunes review chart, leave your review, and I'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.